This is Toledo Symphony Lab, a behind-the-scenes look at the world of classical music from WGTE Public Media and your Toledo Symphony. I'm Brad Cresswell. Joining me today in the studio are the Toledo Symphony's president and CEO, Zach Vassar. We also have principal second violin and artistic administrator, Merwin Sue. And we have a very special guest joining us by phone today. That is the wonderful conductor, Joanne Folletta. Joanne, before I bring you in, I'm going to play a little fanfare to welcome you. There we go. Welcome.
Thank you. That's a wonderful beginning.
Don't they play like a fanfare every time you come on stage, that sort of thing?
Well, now you've given me the idea of this, Brad. I may have to do this.
That's right. You have a little talk with the brass section of the Buffalo Philharmonic. Joanne Folletta is coming to Toledo to conduct the TSO. The program is called New Year, New World. It's happening Saturday at 8 p.m. in the Toledo Museum of Art Peristyle. You can call the box office at 419-246-8000. You can also go online to toledosymphony.com and find out all about the concert there as well. Now, Joanne, before we talk about the concert and the music we're going to hear on it, I want to be sure that our listeners have some background info on you. So I want to read the first part of your official biography, okay? And then I want to dig a little bit deeper. But this is what it says when I do a Google search on you. It says, multiple Grammy-winning conductor Joanne Folletta serves as music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, music director laureate of the Virginia Symphony Orchestra, principal guest conductor of the Brevard Music Center, artistic advisor of the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra, and you were recently named one of the 50 great conductors, past and present, by Gramophone magazine. And I love this description here. You've been hailed for having Toscanini's tight control over ensemble, Walter's affectionate balancing of inner voices, Stokowski's gutsy showmanship, and a controlled frenzy worthy of Bernstein. And upon your appointment as music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic, Joanne Folletta became the first woman to lead a major American ensemble. So that definitely deserves accolades right there. I imagine you've heard all that before, haven't you?
I have. Thank you for saying it.
Well, the only reason I say it is because I want our listeners to know, you know, what an event this is to have you come to Toledo and work with the Toledo Symphony. I mean, one thing I didn't mention is that you've got about 500 gazillion recordings out there, and we play a lot of them here at the radio station. So, you know, for me, it's a personal honor to have you on the podcast today, but for the entire listening audience at large, it's really one of those must-see concerts. Mm-hmm. They have to come and engage. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on here that we're going to talk about that is definitely worth seeing in concert. But before we do all that, I wonder if you, Joanne, could tell us a little bit more about your journey to becoming a conductor and when you first got into classical music. So this is taking you back, you know, a little earlier than the bio that I just read. I wonder if you can tell us a little of that story.
Well, you know, it goes back to my 7th birthday, I guess. My father gave me a gift that really surprised me that day. He gave me a little classical guitar, and he had arranged for a lesson the next day. So that was the beginning of my life in music. I fell in love with that guitar, and I became completely involved in music. It was the most wonderful thing I could imagine. I just loved everything about that instrument. And then, you know, my parents, seeing that, like, how much I love music, started taking us to concerts, and my sister and myself, and that led to, you know, lots of lessons, lots of studying, finally going to Manus College of Music and Juilliard, and I never looked back. I just knew I was a musician from maybe a few days after I had that little guitar.
So when did you get the conducting bug, as it were? You were a guitarist, you studied guitar, and then when did you start to become interested in doing something else?
You know, it was at those concerts. I grew up in New York City, and we went to concerts a lot. And I remember one when I was probably 11, around 11. Yeah, we went to Carnegie Hall, and I heard Beethoven 6 played live for the first time. And I remember turning to my dad and saying, I want to be a conductor. I want to be in the middle of that, because I felt so elevated. I felt so somehow so much happier about everything, having heard that music. So I remember that concert very clearly. But, of course, there were a lot of concerts. And I became totally fascinated by the orchestra. And, again, I wanted to be the person that helped enable that to happen.
Yeah.
And that was when I started to think about it.
Well, and you've also been a role model for so many other female conductors out there. I mean, you sort of broke the glass ceiling when you led the Buffalo Philharmonic. Were you cognizant at the time of the significance of that?
Not at all. You know, when I started thinking about conducting and started studying, you know, and that even at my time in school, I was not really aware of how rare it was for a woman to do this. I think at Juilliard I became more cognizant of it because there was there were people saying, can a woman really be accepted in this profession? But by that point, you know, I didn't want to look back for that. I mean, I couldn't look back. And this was my total focus of my life. I loved music, and I was not going to end my dream. And so I feel like I have been very lucky.
Yeah.
I'm really living my dream. That's what I wanted to do since age 11. And I was lucky that maybe I entered the conducting world just as the door was opening for women.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your conducting style, because conductors come in all different, you know, flavors, as it were. You kind of came in a little bit later than the school of conductors that were kind of autocratic, you know, and they ruled with an iron fist. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your approach to working with musicians, the Buffalo Philharmonic in particular. And when you go out and do guesting spots like you're doing with Toledo Symphony, what motivates you, or what is your prime directive, as it were, when you engage with these ensembles?
Well, there's one overriding hope that I have, and that is that I can sort of create a landscape where those musicians can be as excellent as they are. Mm. And that, I think, is the job of the conductor, to help things beautiful happen. You know, so I'm very focused when I work with groups on who they are and their approach and their sound and their personality as an orchestra. And every orchestra has its own personality, because I think that's what's interesting about music. It's not static. It's always different. I mean, a performance with the Toledo Symphony will sound different than one with Virginia Symphony or Buffalo Philharmonic. And that's great. I mean, that's so exciting that musicians and their orchestras have characters, have a personality of their own. So I look for that, and I love exploring that. So, yeah, I think the time of the autocratic conductor certainly passed. But that really means for me that we work more as a team, that I'm very aware of the talent around me. I mean, truly, Brad, the talent in an orchestra is astonishing when you think about how many years these people have studied their instruments, how many hours they've practiced in their lives. It's almost incomprehensible. It's overwhelming. And there I am in the middle of this unbelievable, gifted group of people. It's such an honor, and I'm aware of that all the time. But as the conductor, you know, you are responsible for shaping the rehearsals, shaping the sound of the orchestra, bringing them all together, in other words, and helping things coalesce in a way that lets them be great.
I need to bring in a little applause for that, because it's wonderful to hear somebody such as yourself talk in those terms of bringing out the talents, you know, of the individual musicians. And I imagine every orchestra that you work with has their own sort of language, their own sound, and the ability to bring that out and identify that, I think, is really remarkable. Merwin, did you want to
I just wanted to delve into that just a little bit, because I think it must be fascinating for somebody who has the experience of music directing multiple orchestras, but then also frequent guest work. And I think our listeners will be fascinated to like to kind of delve into the sense of orchestras having different personalities and characters. And, you know, how long does it take for you to kind of get a sense of that character? Is it almost like this immediate thing? Or do you kind of, after a couple of rehearsals, you have a better sense of what the musicians are like? Or do you kind of feel like, oh, I know within the first 5 minutes?
Well, not really the first 5 minutes, Merwin, but in the first rehearsal, I develop a very, very strong sense of what those musicians are like. First of all, I usually start the rehearsal by letting them play, you know, like not rehearsing right away. I'll play the whole first movement of the Dvorak New World Symphony, and I'll be listening to them constantly. And I'll be watching them too, because there's a lot of body language of musicians that tells you something about them. You know, that tells you that the oboist would like to take a little more time in that phrase, or that the cellos might linger a little bit longer if you would let them do that, you know, that they enjoy that, or that the basses like to be paid attention to. You know, they don't want to feel like an appendage in the orchestra, that they're the ground of the orchestra. So listening constantly and watching how people relate to each other tells me a lot about how they are as an organization, as an ensemble, and how they feel about music.
Yeah, basses take note, definitely.
I'm going to do a quick follow-up with that. You mentioned like there's all of these little cues that you're taking from how people interact, and so many of these are nonverbal cues. Has that changed in the last couple of years when like people are masked and the distancing? Have you found that your antenna need to be attuned differently?
You're right. You're very sensitive about that. I mean, it's been more difficult. I mean, I spent a lot of time in 2020 with the Buffalo Philharmonic masked and distanced, and I knew them so well. So that was a little bit easier, spending that time together. But guest conducting with an orchestra that you don't know wearing masks, that's a little harder. And you've got to really listen and watch their body language and watch their responses. And you know, their eyes tell you a lot, too. So maybe it's honed my way of really trying to tune into them.
Yeah, and I think we've all gotten so used to looking at each other's eyes, you know, to communicate that at this point it seems to have made a change that's going to stay with us, you know, no matter what. Zach, you want to chime in here?
I'm just fascinated, Joanne, by the conversation we're having here. The question I had for you is whether you've noticed any regional or, you know, continental differences as you come into those new settings in orchestras for the first time. Or is this indeed an international language?
Yeah, internationally, maybe. I mean, in our country, of course, in orchestras, there's such a mix of people who are coming from all over the United States. I mean, for instance, the Buffalo Philharmonic, I think we may only have two or three people who grew up in that area. You know, most of our musicians have come from other places in the country. So I don't find as noticeable, except that the group itself develops the personality. For instance, in Buffalo, we play quite a bit behind the beat, and no one ever talks about it. And a new person coming in for the first time seems to understand that in about 3 minutes and finds their way in the ensemble. So there's some way of communicating nonverbally. In Europe, in Asia, there are different ways there are different styles, but for instance, I was always amazed in Germany at how much the musicians loved to rehearse. They would have many more rehearsals than we had, very often 8 or 9 rehearsals in a week, and they seemed to just love the rehearsal possibility, you know, to play this music so many times. Other places are quite different. You know, there are places, especially in Asia. When I went to Japan for the first time, I was helped to understand that the language I used had to be extremely respectful. And of course, you would do that in any case. You're respectful to these great artists, but in Japan, it was even more important because of how they treated each other. And I thought that was a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. Every country is different. Musicians have different, of course, approaches. But, you know, Zach, in the end, I always come back saying, you know, it sounds like, you know, just one of those things that people say that doesn't mean much, but music is an international language in that people understand music in the same way. I noticed this when I conducted in China. That the musicians would smile at exactly the same places in the music that the Buffalo musicians would smile. They'd struggle with exactly the same places. They laughed at exactly the same moments. So there's something about music that people understand regardless of their background and their language and even their schooling. There's something in certain people's DNA, the DNA of musicians, I guess, they just understand that.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way of describing it. Although, as a international conductor, you sort of have to have some ability to adapt as well to make that happen. So it's fascinating to hear those stories. You guys have anything else that you want to ask her about this particular subject? Because I do have that little bit of guitar quiz, Joanne. You were a guitarist when you began, so that inspired me to do a little classical guitar quiz. I've got five questions here, and we'll just throw out a couple right now, see how we do. Okay.
Okay.
So the first question is this: which of these old school celebrities was in fact a guitarist? Was it Albert Einstein? Was it Napoleon Bonaparte? Or was it Vincent Van Gogh or Van Gogh? If you want to.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. Which of those three? And you know, I get my information from the internet, so it could be totally unreliable. But
well, I know that Einstein was a violinist and pianist.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say he wasn't a guitarist. He had his hands full with other things he was doing. I would, just by the time that he was living, there's a chance that Napoleon Bonaparte was a guitarist, only because Europe was undergoing a great surge in interest in the guitar in that time.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, this is like the most comprehensive quiz answer I've ever experienced.
Actually, yes. Joanne, did you perform in the Van Gogh Immersive Exhibition?
We did. We took it over for one night.
That's
I don't know
amazing.
How many people have seen that exhibit. It's really beautiful and hard to explain. It's like moving paintings of Van Gogh surrounding you. But they have their own soundtrack, and I went to see it in New York City and thought, you know, it's beautiful, but the music has nothing to do with that period.
Yeah.
So in Buffalo, we asked the Van Gogh people if we could take it over on a Monday, you know, when they were closed. And they said, okay, yeah, we'll give it to you on a Monday. And we put together our own soundtrack of French music.
Wow,
and it was one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever been in the middle of, and musicians and the girl with the flaxen hair and Debussy and Ravel, all of these beautiful pieces from that time. So it was really fun for us.
Yeah, and of course I had that completely in mind when I was putting together this quiz, right? No, I didn't.
Joanne, I just saw that exhibit myself in Portland, and I was struck by exactly what you had identified. The soundtrack had nothing to do with the paintings. There was a string quartet performance of Simon and Garfunkel at one point that it was beautiful, but odd. But I would just love to hear that music paired. Brilliant idea.
It was quite beautiful to do those pieces, you know, that we don't always do, just one right after the other.
Yeah.
It was a good experience.
Let's do one more question here in my little five-question quiz, and then I want to talk about some of the music on the program that we're going to hear. So here's the next question. It's who is known as the father of the classical guitar? Was it Francisco Tárrega? Was it Joaquin Rodrigo or was it Fernando Sor? Which one is known as the father?
I think Fernando Sor.
Yeah, you know, that's what I always thought too. And I'm okay, you're right. I'm just going to go with that. I'm just going to go with that. I found a couple of internet sources that said Francisco Tárrega, but Fernando Sor, Padre Sor.
I mean, he certainly was very influential. I guess for me, Sor came to mind because he has so many methods and so many studies. But maybe it's true that Tárrega holds that honor. And why not? He's a great guitarist and a great composer.
Yeah,
I'm having one of those moments right now where I realize we're talking to somebody who has the credibility to go on Wikipedia and change that entry. So I say we go with Joanne's answer.
Yeah. No, I'm a step ahead of you. Joanne has already won the quiz, and we've still got three questions to go.
Oh, so, just like Merwin then, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Merwin is famous for winning the quiz. I think he has some major competition this time around. And that's okay because, you know, the conductor is always right. Yeah.
I don't know about that. But.
Joanne, let's talk about some of the music that is on this program. It's an all-American program. And I'm drawn to this piece by Adolphus Hailstorm. This is a fantastic composer who has written so much music that is really audience friendly. It's something that engages listeners. It's interesting, yet it's not quite as often programmed. So this is a great opportunity to hear his three spirituals, which he wrote in 2005. And I know that you recorded it also with the Virginia Symphony Orchestra. And you know Mr. Hailstorm personally, yeah?
I do, and he's a great friend of mine. In fact, we both moved to Norfolk, Virginia at around the same time, me to come to work with the orchestra and he to teach at a number of universities there. So in a way, he became our resident composer. We were so lucky because he lived there and we were anxious and happy to play anything he would write. He wrote for the Virginia Symphony and he put that city on the musical map. I mean, one of his first pieces was An American Port of Call, which is a description of Norfolk, Virginia. But everything he wrote had some connection to our landscape. So I played a lot of his music, and I thought it would be so nice to bring him to Toledo because this is his 80th birthday year.
Yeah.
And he's not only a wonderful composer, he's a wonderful human being. His music exudes a kind of warmth, a kind of unifying force, a kind of collective friendship between people. And this one is very beautiful, going back to three spirituals that he loved. So I'm delighted to introduce him, perhaps, to some audience members.
Yeah. Now, he is an African-American composer, for folks who don't know, and he has written some music that pertains to his heritage and to the experience of African-Americans. Can you talk a little bit about programming and trying to find diversity in the, you know, the white European world of classical music? I imagine it's a bit of a challenge sometimes to balance things out, as it were.
Well, it's a bit of a challenge on that there's so many pieces that in the music world that we could program. We don't know. We're studying them. You know, I will say that having a little more time during the pandemic has enabled me to do a lot of studying of repertoire by composers I didn't know so well. Of course, Dolph I knew very well, but composers of diversity, women composers, composers of the past whose names have kind of fallen through the cracks. There's so much wealth and richness in our possibility of playing. So it's great to mix things in, and I think every orchestra finds their own way of doing that. Yeah. Every conductor finds their way of bringing Beethoven next to Adolphus Hailstorm or Dvorak next to Joan Tower or something, so that we give the sense that the truth of the fact that music is continuing. It is a beautiful museum, but not only that, it's a reflection of our lives.
Yeah.
So that as we go on, people continue to write and we continue to play it and we expand our possibilities of repertoire.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And of course, you have a reputation for championing a lot of these living contemporary composers. And it's great to hear you talking a little bit about, you know, the repertoire that's out there and finding stuff that is still relevant and meaningful today. Joanne is coming to Toledo to conduct the TSO. It's happening Saturday at 8 o'clock at the Toledo Museum of Art Peristyle, a wonderful program of American works. You can find more information at the box office, which is 419-246-8000. Also online at toledosymphony.com. Joanne, we've been talking about Adolphus Hailstork, and I notice you call him Dolph. I guess that's his nickname for his friends?
That's his nickname, and he's a very, very down-to-earth man for as famous as he is. He's just a delightful human being.
Well, if I ever have the opportunity to meet him or come across him, I'm going to call him Dolph, and I'll say that you sent me. I'll say Joanne sent me. And, you also have a guest singer on this program, that is Janina Burnett. I know, Merwin, you have some history with her, right? You want to talk a little bit about her and what she's going to sing for us?
Sure. I actually first got the chance to hear Janina Burnett in a digital production of I Am Harriet Tubman by the composer Nkiru Okoye. And she's just an amazing communicator. The voice is just a tool to communicate emotion. And yeah. I think she's just a really magnetic performer. And so this is actually the third time that she's performed with musicians of the Toledo Symphony. She actually performed with the Toledo Opera as Marguerite and Faust. I think this was...
That was
2014.
A while ago. Yeah.
And then she performed excerpts of the Okoye with us everything pre-pandemic is so hard to yeah. get a year down. I think it might have been 2020.
Yeah, I think it was 2020.
Yes. So I'm so very excited to have her in the Peristyle.
Yeah, we're going to talk of things in terms of pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, right?
Yes, absolutely.
When we finally make our way out here. Now, Janina is singing that piece by Samuel Barber, setting the text of James Agee, Knoxville Summer of 1915. I know, Joanne, you have some stuff to say about this particular piece and about Barber in particular. And so I wonder if I can just turn it over to you a little bit to talk about this particular work.
Well, thank you, because I don't know how you knew that Samuel Barber is one of my absolute favorite composers. I think in our American list of luminaries, he is just right at the top. I mean, he's in a sense our country's most romantic composer. I mean, he's an amazing genius. And this particular piece is very moving, Knoxville Summer of 1915. He based it on a kind of a prose poem written by the great writer James Agee. It's the prologue to a book he wrote called A Death in the Family, and it's about his experience as a young boy losing his father in a streetcar accident, James Agee. The writing is so beautiful of that poem, of his thinking of his family. But Barber read it, and at that time he realized that he was exactly the same age as James Agee. He had the same experience, and Barber's father was dying at the point when he read it. This was 1947. And he was incredibly moved by it, and I think you can tell. I mean, these in his words, he said that his poem moved me so deeply. My musical response was immediate and intense. I wrote Knoxville in a few days. And I think you can only do that when you're in the middle of some emotion that's so poignant for you. So you can hear that in the piece. You know, the soprano becomes this young boy, 5 years old, when he lost his father, James Agee, talking about the beautiful life she had as a child, the security, the love, the family around him, and missing them. And it's just, a perfect piece, and to have Janina sing this, I think will be incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And the music itself strikes me as so befitting of the text. And it's as if the music has been going on well before you join it in progress, and then it keeps going past the point that you're finished with the poem. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like that song Morgen or Tomorrow by Richard Strauss, where the voice, you know, sort of comes in the middle of a phrase. There's that same kind of feeling to it. It's just pure genius all the way through.
I think you're right. I mean, there is a sense of the eternal about it. It's just he's understanding, Barbara's understanding and conveying the sense of life unfolding and people passing and new people coming in, but it's all being interconnected, especially to our parents. So it's a very, very special experience to hear this work, and I imagine some people might be hearing it live for the first time.
Yeah, and certainly a piece of music that I think has taken on even more relevance and importance in the wake of the pandemic and people's experience with the pandemic and with relatives being affected by it as well. I think it'll be a really cathartic experience for some of our listeners. Let's talk a little bit about Dvorak, because you've also got this, I mean, it's a great big huge work, the Symphony No. 9, Symphony from the New World. For people that don't know the story, maybe you can give us a little background on this piece.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, Brad, that this is an all-American program, and you're absolutely right. Even though Dvorak, of course, was Bohemian, but he belonged to us. You know, Dvorak came to the United States to actually teach young American composers. That's why he was brought to New York City, to the conservatory there, to start an American school of music in the late 19th century. And he, you know, Dvorak never did anything halfway. He invested himself completely in this experience, studying Native American music, studying African American spirituals, learning as much as he could so that he could help young American composers find their voice. And this is a perfect way of showing that, because he wrote this piece while he was in the United States. That's why he entitled it From the New World, because there he is in the New World writing this piece. And it's so reflective of those cultures that he really prized. I mean, there's slow movements. It could be an African-American spiritual. The second and third movements were inspired partly by the poem Hiawatha, which is again, the Native American culture that he also felt was very noble and very musically inspiring. So it is a perfect piece in some ways. You know, it's heartfelt. Stirring. It's the symphony that everyone loves. I mean, it's Bohemian, but it's so American at the same time.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful story behind the work and everything that went into it, and sort of an earlier representation of a composer struggling to find an American voice. You know, I mean, composers have been doing that for a long time, and Samuel Barber, you know, found his own path as far as defining an American voice at a time when everybody was looking to, you know, kind of crazy 12-tone type music. Sammy Barber was writing this beautiful, accessible music, and I think that it really sets him apart, just like Dvorak, when he was looking to different kinds and different forms of American folk music to use.
That's
symphony.
Right. You know, and he had done that, of course, in Bohemia. I mean, he became the voice of his people. I mean, in terms of the rhythms that he used, the folk songs that he used, the dance music that he used, that was his landscape. That was where his heart was, and so he was trying to help Americans find that connection to their country. And I think he inspired many, many people to write in a different way. We only read about him, but from what we read, we know that he was a person of great integrity, great warmth, and great devotion. If he was here and he was really completely committed to helping our country develop our own music.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a couple of more questions for you, Joanne, if you don't mind. Merlin and I were talking before we got on mic about when you were here before. You've been in Toledo before, right?
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember when that was? We were thinking it was back in the 80s, maybe.
It was. It might have been. I've got to think for a moment, and you know, maybe I can I can let you know in just a couple of minutes. I'm looking it up too.
But
I remember it was a wonderful experience, and I remember the Peristyle, which was, you know, a startlingly beautiful place to make music. It was extraordinary, really extraordinary.
I'm so happy to hear that because I think it does imprint itself on visitors and especially those who have a international career like yours. You still remember that space because it's so unique.
It is unique and it was beautiful. And I, before or after, I've never seen a performance space as special as that one.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. I have another question, but it also, looking over here, I see that I still have a few questions left on my quiz. You guys want to do, I mean, we can do one more question. Why don't we do that? And then we can wrap it up. So let me pull out the most ridiculous question that I can find here. Okay. According to GuitarTopReview.com, the most popular color for acoustic classical guitars is what? Black, white, or natural wood? One of those three is the most popular color for acoustic classical guitars. What color was your guitar, Joanne?
Well, natural wood, so I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
Well,
it would have to be the answer.
Natural wood color.
I'm going
to
say that's probably the real answer. The answer that they have listed is black, but I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to go with natural wood. We're changing it right there.
I think you've been very generous to me, Brad.
So, Maestro Joanne Folletta has swept our quiz for Toledo Symphony Lab.
And that means she gets your voice on her personal
answering machine?
Is that how
Yeah, we'll be in touch about that, I'm sure. So, let me ask you, you know, we're pretty close to the new year. Any resolutions out there for you, Joanne?
You know, I always make the same resolution, and I think it helps me, you know, just sort of put myself in a good place, and that is to treasure every moment. And maybe that was even a little bit of a keener resolution this year, you know, because of what we had lived through. But to not look so much towards the future, but to live in the moment. And there's so much beauty. I mean, every day, pretty much, I get to be in the middle of an orchestra. And for me, there's no more beautiful place than that. So I want to live every one of those minutes with orchestra musicians with joy. And I do, and I feel very lucky.
Joanne Folletta is coming to Toledo to conduct the Toledo Symphony. It is a program called New Year, New World, Saturday at 8 p.m. in the Toledo Museum of Art Peristyle. More information through the box office at 419-246-8000. Also, tickets are available at toledosymphony.com. This program is a production of WGTE Public Media in collaboration with our sponsor, the Toledo Symphony, with generous support from the Rita Barber Kern Foundation. You can download episodes of our program as a podcast by going to our website at wgte.org/lab. You can also subscribe to us through your podcast app of choice, including Apple and Google Podcasts. Don't forget to check out all the upcoming events at the Symphony by visiting their website. That's at toledosymphony.com, and their various social media outlets on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can find the TSO's streaming platform online at stream.artstoledo.com. My thanks to Zach Vassar, Merwin Sue, and especially to our guest, Joanne Folletta. I'm Brad Cresswell. This has been Toledo Symphony Lab from FM 91.